Are you curious about what it'd be like to be in the missions field? What it like be like to get started or have a heart for going into the missions field? Our guest on this episode is Tom Harvey. He has spent almost his entire working career in the missions field, and he also started a nonprofit called Release the Oppressed Ministries, which helps guide people in if they want to go to the missions field, and also helps with some of the startup costs that you see with any business venture. We go into a conversation here about experiences he's seen, what he's seen go well and not go well, what it would be like to go into the missions field. And I know if you're considering that option, you're going to find this episode very helpful.
Tom, thank you so much for being on here with me. I appreciate it. Nice to get to spend time with you. Yeah, we've spent years together. I don't know how many years now, 12, 15, 17. Oh, it's been probably at least 14, I would think. I think we started going to the same church in like 2010.
Yes, we did. It was about when my daughter was born, so that's how long I've known you. I've been talking to you. So, I've kind of use you as a sounding board for a lot of things, as you know, as you're not surprised. And as we go through this Circle the Panda podcast, which is about teaching people how to do business a certain way and encouraging them through our own stories and through our guests to do business in a way that, quite frankly, is God-honoring. I'm not as obvious about that when it comes to the for-profit space or what I normally cover here, but that's the point, is to say if you do business a set way, there's a pretty good chance it's going to go well for you. But I don't have any experience in the missions field, and what I know about nonprofits is I know a fair amount. I started one, but I've never run one. So what I want to ask you today is a little bit of your background in the missions field, and then we have some listeners from time to time that will ask me, "Hey, I want to know what it's like to start a mission." Is that what you call it? Is that
I'm in a mission, and we, on the side or parallel to it, we started a nonprofit.
Okay. So if you don't mind, if you'll tell us your background in the missions field, and then we're going to get some questions about, the similarities between how do you lead a for-profit and a nonprofit and some of the differences, so that if somebody's out here listening and say, "You know what, I want to go into the missions field and I do it for a nonprofit. How do I do it?" So this is the intent of us recording.
Okay.
So if you'll give us some of your background about your experience in the missions field.
Yeah, I was pretty new Christian. I came to faith when I was 22 years old, and when I was 24, I believe the Lord told me to go to Haiti, and then doors started opening, and within 3 weeks I knew how I was going to get there. I didn't want to go. But the only answer you can give the Lord is yes, Lord, right? So you can't say no, Lord. That's bad English. And He's Lord, and I didn't realize that I was really created for things He wanted to bring me into, and one of those was missions. So I went hesitantly, but I was in a small fishing village. I was going to stay there for a year, and 4 days in, I never wanted to leave. So at the end of the year, when it was my pastor wrote me a letter and said, "Obviously, you love this. If you're going to be a missionary," and I was like, "I'm not going to be a missionary. This was just a good thing that God had me doing." But then when I prayed about it, I felt like the Lord said, "Yeah, this was like your happiest year ever." So yeah, He's good. He knows us better than we know ourselves, and He leads us into things that we might not have chosen. And this was one of the things. So I went to Bible college, met my wife, and then we ended up joining WEC International, and with the idea of going to Central Asia. And we did. And we were, in Central Asia about 10 years. And then we came back home. And I would say that was the end of my missionary work. But we still are with the same mission. But now we train and we send missionaries home to do missions work. A missionary is a sent person. I'm not speaking for all of Christendom here because there are people that would disagree with me, and I don't argue it. I'm letting you know what I think. And
the apostolic gift, some people would say, oh, that ended. We have 12 apostles only, but we know that's biblically not true because Barnabas was an apostle, according to Acts 15. But there's a gift that's given to the church, and one of them is apostles, pastors, teachers, evangelists, and prophets. And I don't think any of those don't exist today. but some Christians would say some of those gifts don't exist today, but I don't think so. An apostle is someone who's a sent one. Missionary is another word for that. So you send an apostle first to people who have never heard the gospel before, who are unreached or who are prevented from hearing the gospel. And they're the ones that go first. And God does some things through them to prove his word to people that have never heard before. And then you have evangelists that will come, and they will show the way of following Christ, mm-hmm. how to begin following Christ. And then you've got teachers that will help them, and prophets that will speak encouragement and to build them up and strengthen the church, and pastors, of course, to pastor the flock once you've got a flock. So as a missionary, I went to a people group. That had never heard the gospel before. They had no Bible in their language. So that at that time, I would consider myself using my apostolic gift to start a new work. The gift is now in operation because besides the work I do with the mission, we also started a nonprofit called Release the Oppressed Ministries, which is an apostolic ministry in the sense that people with vision will come and say, hey, you know, this is what God has me doing. I'm a little frustrated. I want it to grow, but we're kind of stuck. And Release the Oppressed Ministries is a board of people. We do it not as a hobby, but as a passion. Mm-hmm. I love if someone has a vision to get the rubber on the road and get that vision going. So we help them start nonprofits or foundations. We've been doing that since 2011. And so we'll help people wherever they're at in the process. A lot of times visionaries, they get stuck. You know, they look at this list of things to do and they just get stymied. And I understand that feeling. I know that feeling, but it's really very doable. You can only do one step at a time. You can't do step three without doing step one and two. So just to take people and walk them through those steps, it's amazing when the light goes on, they realize, wow, we can do this. they've been doing it already usually, but God wants to grow their ministry and he wants to become greater in that ministry. And so that's what Release the Oppressed Ministries does. So I get to work with apostolic people and missionaries, but I don't feel particularly sent anywhere. I feel particularly called to be where I am.
Okay, so if I were to come to you and go, hey, Tom, I think I want to go to, you know, Africa to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. What are some of the first things you would ask me?
How do you know that God wants you to do that? That would be the very first thing.
How do you know if God wants you to do that?
Yeah.
And I go, man, I'm asking tough questions right out of the gate, but I know you can. So I go, you know, I don't know. I just know there's a need down there. I'm not so sure he's asking me or not. And where would you go from there?
Oh, I would say, well, you see the need, so pray for those people. You know, God might want you to do something else to help them besides going to them. Or he might be putting it on your heart and he's going to confirm that and open up a way for you to go. So yeah, when I first got the call to Haiti, it's going to kind of look a bit strange, but I was actually in the shower and I opened my eyes in the shower and I didn't see soap or water. I saw a picture of a coconut grove and black men without shirts on carrying lumber through the coconut grove, just a second. And then I heard the word Haiti. I don't know if I heard it with my ears, but it was so strong. It was very impressionable. And I was scared. I was alarmed. And I went upstairs to my room and I just started praying. And I was like, God, if you want me to send money to Haiti, I didn't have any money. I was right out of college. So that was easy to boast. And then I said, I'll pray an hour a day for Haiti. Well, I didn't even at the time pray an hour a day for anything. So that was pretty empty and I still had no peace. And then this feeling was like, I'll go to Haiti if you want me to, Lord. And I didn't want to go, but I had peace. I felt like he was telling me, this is, yes, you're going.
So the next week at church, I was single at the time, and I'm sitting with the young single adults that were my friends. I would go out for ice cream after church every Sunday. And they were asking me, what's new? You know, I haven't seen you in a few days. And I said, well, I think God is telling me to go to Haiti. And they laughed. They thought it was funny. And then the pastor got up and he said, and we used to have an evening service and we used to have a morning service at that church at that time. And the pastor got up and said, according to the bulletin, I'm speaking tonight, but actually I'm not going to speak tonight. Brother George Tellis is going to come and he's going to talk about his new mission station that he's starting in Haiti. I mean, this was before Google and I had no idea where Haiti was. Anything I'd ever heard about Haiti, it sounded poor. I was a suburban white kid. I never lacked anything, and poor people made me nervous. You know, if I gave to people who were poor, I felt guilty. If I didn't give to them, I felt guilty. They just weren't comfortable for me to be around. Also, I failed French and Spanish in high school, and I even had a little certificate saying I didn't have an aptitude to take foreign language. So why is God sending me to a place? And also, I was a suburban Boston kid, and at that time, the racial tensions between white people and black people was really strong. I even got attacked once for being white in Boston. So there was fear there all around. I'm going to be a white person in a black village that's very, very poor, and they don't speak English. I'll have to learn the language, and I've been told I can't do that. But, you know, God is God, and it doesn't. If I have anxiety, He comes in, and I did have anxiety. But like I said, I went because he's Lord and because he said so. And then I got really blessed. It was the best year of my life.
You know what's fascinating that I'm hearing? So you heard him speak to you about going to Haiti. And you said, what in the world? Excuse me. The way I'm translating. You said, okay, you heard him say, go to Haiti, show your side. And you're like, what Haiti, why? And then you got a sense of peace, which is an indicator of the fruit of the Spirit.
Oh, yeah, I never looked at it that way, but yeah, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, gentleness, peace.
So it might be that that's confirmation. And then when you went to church, your buddies were laughing at you. Mm-hmm. So you had to tune out your buddies mm-hmm. and keep listening to what he wanted you to do. Mm-hmm. And then they had the guests come up. So it was like there's two cases of him saying, okay, I'm going to confirm for you, Tom, through that one. So you saw, what was next? Did you know when he came up there that that's the second time, or was there a third time you say, I know exactly, I'm supposed to go to Haiti, and I know how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Was there another step in there that confirmed it, or were you just all in from the beginning?
I was so scared of the idea of going. AIDS was a really big problem then, that year in Haiti, and nobody... Yet, I think the medical world knew why, but nobody was saying what causes AIDS. So my parents, who were not believers at the time, they became believers later, were just not happy with this decision. And I'm like, tell God, I'm not happy with this decision either. But it was just one of those things. I didn't realize that I had no reason to fear AIDS, but that was going on in Haiti at the time. And nobody knew why. And so there was mysteries, but, you know, I'd start to doubt and pray even that God would take this calling away or this direction away. And then someone would show up at my door. Literally, a friend showed up at my door and she had a Haiti t-shirt on. Who has a Haiti t-shirt? But she had been working with Mother Teresa's Death and Dying Home. She was a Catholic girl and she was working at Mother Teresa's Death and Dying Home. And she just came to visit, felt like popping in. And so we had fellowship and she was telling me about that. But I already knew that I was going to be going with this Calvary Chapel in Worcester, Massachusetts. They were going to start this station. It ended up being called New Missions, New England and World Missions. And it still goes on today. This was the first year they were starting. They had like 50 kids that they were having a feeding program, a medical clinic, and they were going to start a church in a village that had none of these things. And now they're spread out all over Haiti and they're spread out into the Dominican Republic. But this was just, I was just there the first year. They didn't have buildings yet, or they just had building structures. Mm-hmm. So I was going to just do whatever they asked me to do, you know, screening windows. I'm not a trained at anything. So just give me the nails, show me where to hammer, and I'll try to do my best. But what ended up happening is they had these kids in the feeding program, and all the other five people from this church that were there were really busy doing things, and they had been there a few months before I got there. And so they just had me working with the kids, you know, and it was funny when I went down there, they said, you can stay for 2 or 3 weeks, but the Lord had told me a year. So I thought, well, after 3 weeks, I'm gonna have to find another way to stay there. But after 3 weeks, they said, wow, you've got the language coming so quickly. Can you just keep working with the kids? And I was like, I got the language? And I was like, I guess I am talking a lot with the kids. You know, kids are very different than a textbook, right? Maybe I can't learn a language from a textbook, but maybe with God's grace and putting around a bunch of kids that are laughing at me all the time because they're making mistakes. It was just so fun. I just had such a fun year. And it wasn't an easy year. I was learning a lot, but it was an adventure and I was created for it. And it was one I would never have chosen or even thought I could do this or I should do this or I would want to do this.
You're created for it. And then when you got down there, rather than say, here's what you folks are going to do, because I'm the one that holds the key, you've looked around and said, where can you serve? And that's a difference maker in everything, isn't it? You said, where can I serve? Lord, I'm here. Where do you want me to serve?
Yeah, I didn't think I was the missionary. I think, you know, God had got me a job. After I became a believer, he got me one job that I didn't want, that I loved. And then he sent me to Haiti. And to me, it was just another gig. It was like, wow, you know, if I just keep following this Jesus, he's just going to keep leading me into what's best for me. Mm-hmm. But I had to learn that, you know, the Father's good, that he knows me better than I know myself, and he loves me more than I love myself. And so if I just keep saying, yes, Lord, that he'll keep leading me into what's best for me. And he says, like, we're created for good works, and good works have been created for us to be doing, and we don't know what those are yet. But we get, like, ideas after a while. Mm-hmm. Like, after a year, being a missionary didn't sound so strange because I'd been working with missionaries for a year. But to become one was not something that ever entered my head. So that's how I got into missions. First, I think you need to have a call. And then your church, you need to be sent, right? So someone needs to send you. So they prayed over Paul and Barnabas, mm-hmm. and then they sent them. And then they would go around doing their mission. Then they would come back to the church, and they would report to the church what God had done while they were gone. So,
which if the church is functioning properly, it's a support group for, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a sponsor for support. They're going to pray for you. Mm-hmm. They're going to be reaching out to you. So that's a...
Yeah. In fact, one of the requirements to join most mission agencies is a pastoral reference. Your church needs to recognize the gift in you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they wouldn't let you teach Sunday school if they didn't recognize it. Maybe you had a teaching gift.
Yeah.
You know, so the same thing with, you know, I think this person is called into apostolic ministry to be a sent one. They wouldn't call it, but most don't call it apostolic. They call it missionary. But that's what it is. It's being prayed over and sent, and people in your church are confirming it. And one thing that our mission at WEC we require is that you're in a church for at least a year
mm-hmm.
before you apply. If the pastor or the Sunday school teacher or your home group leader doesn't know you for at least a year, then we don't accept the application, because we want to know that you can work with other Christians. There's a lot of people that they want to join the mission because they're just with the church, you know? they go from church to church to church, and no church is good enough for them. But if they get this idea that if I just go overseas where there's no Christians, then I can start my own church. And it's like, well, you can try that. But I think God uses the church to confirm someone's calling sometimes. And sometimes, you know, a pastor might go up to somebody and say, you know, have you ever prayed about missions? Because I really see you doing it. And they might be like me, where I would never have thought that. But a mature Christian can speak into their life. And my pastor did that for me. You know, after I was there for 9 months or so, he wrote a letter and said, you know, if you're going to seriously be considering missions, you're obviously enjoying this year, you need to go to Bible school. And that's another requirement a lot of evangelical missions require anyway, most denominations, is that you get some Bible education. They vary in how much they would require, but.
Okay, here's where I put the hat on that I know some listeners or viewers are thinking. They go, but why do you have to go overseas when we have all these needs right here? How would you answer that one?
I get that a lot because our department, where we work now, is working with children and youth who are at risk or in crisis. And there are children and youth who are at risk or in crisis right in our neighborhood. And we do work with them as well through a group called Neighbors Worldwide in our mission, and we're in the same city. But really, it's, you know, it's all about just saying, because you say so, Lord, I will do it. You know, it's like Peter on the boat, right? Like, they've been fishing all night. They're expert fishermen. They know their thing. And then this carpenter says to them, who happens to be Lord, you know, throw the net on this side. And Peter said, we fished all night and caught nothing, but because you say so, Lord. And then they do. And then they get this huge haul. And I feel like that's part of our spiritual life is, you know, if you can see everything and you know what you're getting into, you don't need faith, you know, but it's our faith that pleases him. It's our faith in him, our trust in him. So when we say, yes, Lord, because you say so, first of all, you need to know he's saying so. There's a lot of people that will get into missions for the wrong reasons, just that there's a lot of people that will do everything for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
But the right reason is because he said so, whether you feel like it or not, whether you want to do that thing or not.
So I'm going to come back to he says so, and I'm going to ask you something you reference, and that's mistakes that you've seen made. Because look, this is a big, this is not a, I'm going to go over there if I don't like it. I'm sure there's some of that, but this is a huge decision. Where have you, a few mistakes you've seen people make when they go on the mission field?
Sometimes they try to bypass that. For example, like, we needed the Bible translated into the language group, into the language of the people that we were reaching out to. And I saw people come onto the mission field that kind of, they didn't really, God didn't tell them to come. Their education was more in Bible translation, and maybe they lacked other things. Their church didn't really know them very well, but because we wanted the translation, they were let to bypass these things. And when they got to the field, I was like the team leader at that time, and so the mission would be sending me people, but also other missions would be sending people, and we would always ask them, "What did God do to get you here?" Because that's so important. When I know their story, what did God do to get you here? I listen and I, okay, so he said this to you, he said that to you, you saw this, you did this. But when some people, you know, and when they say that, you know, I said, this friend came over with a Haiti t-shirt, you know, the pastor got up and said he's not speaking, but this guy's speaking about Haiti. These are things that I ask people, and I still ask people that if they're going to be doing anything by faith. Because faith comes from hearing, and hearing comes from the words of Christ. So you need to hear from God first, then you step into it and do it, and then the fruit of faith happens. So, you know, if someone said to me, none of that kind of stuff, but they said, well, I always like Asian culture and food, and the women are pretty, you know, and I'm single. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, when you're sitting on the toilet for 3 weeks and wondering why you're here, I have nothing for you. And when you say, why did I even come? All I can say is, I don't know why you came, because none of those things are from God that I know of. But if someone, you know, is telling me, you know, out of the, you know, I had this idea that God wanted me to do this, and then out of the blue, this person came and they said the same thing. Then when they're on the toilet for 3 weeks, because you'll be on the toilet for 3 weeks, you lose a lot of weight when your body's adjusting to a new diet and culture and climate. I can remind them, remember what God did, remember what he said. And then it's like, right, I'm not here because I made a stupid decision. I'm here because I'm following a really good God who loves me. And so and then they're encouraged, and you can encourage them with what God has said to them before. It's kind of like what the Israelites did when they would erect those stone things. They're called Ebenezers, not Ebenezer Scrooge, but they called Ebenezer these stone things. And when later, people who don't remember how God rescued them or did something great for them, they would say, what do these stones mean? And then the older people could say, oh, this is from the time when God parted the sea, or God did this, you know. So it's a way to build yourself up and encourage yourself. So I think a calling is just really important, and it doesn't make anyone more special than another. It just means this is what God is calling them to do. One drawback, I think, for a lot of missionaries is that we get put on a pedestal and nobody can see us when we're overseas. So, and then when we come back, they don't want to hear about all the times we sinned, fell short of the glory of God. They want to hear about who got saved, churches planted, Bibles translated, what were your best moments? And then you get up in the pulpit and you share all the highlights, but you don't share the struggle, you don't share the loneliness, you don't share the time that you and your wife argued, you don't share about the time where you were walking in deception because you believed this person hated you when actually it was the enemy attacking you. And you don't talk about that kind of stuff because you've only got 20 minutes, and they want to hear, they've been supporting you financially and prayer, and they want to hear the good stuff. And so what that can breed is, wow, God's incredibly holy. He just jumps from glory to glory. Like, well, you weren't there. But when you're in church and the other gifts are in operation, you can see all their faults, you know? So it's just a little bit, you got to be careful of that. You coming into a place where they don't really know the full picture of your very normal life that just happens to be overseas.
I want to say something that you do for me often, by the way. And I want to encourage everyone to know that they need to find somebody like Tom that will listen, because before this came on, you asked me how the day went. And it was obvious that the Lord was moving in something. And I couldn't figure out why now, or why not sooner. But the answer to that is, I don't know, because I wasn't ready, and that's what he wanted. It's on his time. He does it the way he wants to. I just have to trust. So it's very similar to what you did about the missions field. If somebody says, okay, I want to, or it's not time, or they're getting signals, you'll know. Well, you'll know. And you just got to go, I trust you. And it comes back to that. I trust you. Trust the Lord.
And a lot of times it's like, oh, that's why you wanted me to do this. Because it's, you just, that's faith. Faith, you hear from God and then you do it, and then you find out the why, usually for me.
There you go. You find out the why. So I'm going, and I'm not the only one, because I know a lot of people do this. Well, why is he not answering this? Or why is it now? Just move forward in faith when he tells you to do something, and don't ask the why, because he won't tell you, because that's the faith journey. So you help me out here. That's the whole part of the relationship. If I told you why, the Lord has to go, if I told you why, you probably wouldn't be walking in faith, and you might quit listening. Is that why he does that?
Yeah, and I think, and this is not you at all,
That's okay.
but something that hits is people will say, "Oh, I don't hear from God like you do, Tom." But they do. They do. It's just, but sometimes they'll be like, "God, show me your will, and then I'll decide if I want to do it or not." And they're not going to hear a thing. That's double-minded. It's like he's Lord, so if he tells you to do something, that's what to do. So your answer before you pray is, Lord, the answer is yes, whatever you're saying, I'll do. Then you'll hear. Then you'll hear. If your heart is really there, I mean, you can't just say it, write it up. You really have to wrestle with yourself to get to that point where all my druthers, everything I want, everything I hope he'll say, just put it all aside and spend time with the Lord and say, God, anything you say to me today is what I need to hear the most. And it's going to be the most important thing I hear today. And if you tell me to do anything or not to do something, the answer is yes, Lord. When your heart is there, you can say that, but you got to get your heart there. And that takes a little wrestling for me to get there. But when I get there, then maybe I'll open my Bible, or I'll look at the trees, or I'll, but I'm, right now I know he's with me. I know he's here. I've settled that in. And I got to get myself there too. He's always with us. He never leaves us or forsakes us. But I'm not always aware of it, right? So sometimes I got to get away from my computer, and I need to go find a quiet place, sit down, and just say, God, I'm a mess. I'm all over the place. I'm not sure of the way forward. And I want you to speak on this and this and this. But you know what? You might want to say something to me that has nothing to do with these things, and you might want to do these things 10 days from now. What's today? What are you doing today that you want me to be a part of? How do you want me to respond? And then when my heart is really there, then I'm ripe. I'm ripe for hearing what God has to say. But a lot of people will be like, God, do you want me to go to Thailand or to this? And if he says this, then I'll say yes. Nobody would actually say them, but that's kind of where their heart is. And my heart gets there too. When I have druthers, when I have things that I really want them to talk about, I can get there too. So, but if I really want to hear, I need to get out of there, and he needs to be Lord, and whatever he says goes. And he's so good. It gets easier as you get older to get into the place where you're saying, God, I'm a mess, and I need your goodness to guide me and to speak to me. What do you want me thinking about today? It might just be something to meditate on, because there's certain things in my life I want changed, but sometimes those things need some groundwork laid before you can make that change, so I don't fall apart. And I don't see the groundwork. So I might be asking for this, but I need to stop asking for that and just say, what do you want done? Because he wants this done too. But maybe this needs to be done first. And so he'll have me focus on something else that might have to do with my character, or might have to do with his character that needs to be imparted into me, something like that. And I might not see the connection with that at all. But I need to consider that that's the most important thing I've heard today. And to meditate on that, and to let that stuff go into his timing.
And that he'll tell you what to do, confirm. It goes back to even starting a business, even as a profit or nonprofit. I'm going to try to spin it this way. So, pardon me, correct me. Okay, so somebody's out there going, I want to start a business, or I want to work for this person, or I want to leave the situation. Circle back to the beginning. So you go, okay, now why do you feel that way? And if they're called from the Lord to do that, and then they have the right confirmation, and then you can go, okay, there's a pretty good chance. Well, if he calls them to, then that's what you should do. So I think it regardless if it's starting a business or being going to the missions field, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's okay, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And then what's your plan to go do this? And do you have the right support group around you? Because it's like the church you referenced. And then, kick me if I'm saying it wrong. And then wherever you go or whatever you do, you say, rather than force this on someone, I'm going to look for where I can serve a need. You see, it sounds so much to me like people that are out there going, I'm not happy working here, or I want to start, whatever the reason is. It comes down to that, doesn't it? What is the Lord telling you to do? And you hear these people that are working in a company, or they start their own business, and then they chased it for the money. Nothing wrong with making a lot of money. But if it's just about the money, that usually ends up with them selling the business or retiring from the business, and then they sit around the house and you hear stories about them passing away or making a mistake. The core of it all is what she tell you. Right. So I think it, and you believe is with every single one of us. Every single one of us, the Lord is moving with, right, in their life.
If they belong to him. Not everyone is a child of God. I know that sounds really terrible. And there's some Christmas songs that would contradict that. But biblically, to those who believed in him, he gave the right to become children of God. That's the scripture. So there are people that don't believe in him. He loves them. Jesus died for them, but they're not in connection with him until they're born again. And when you're born again, your spirit is suddenly alive and connected with him. And that's when he starts speaking to you and starts guiding you and doing things. And that's where the adventure for me began. When I prayed to receive Christ, I really didn't expect anything to happen. I was challenged in my heart when I heard that Jesus, that Tom, you're a sinner, right? Yes, I'm a sinner. But even my idea of sin was, I can think of three things that I did that if you knew them, and God certainly does know them, then that would make me a sinner. That's not a good definition of what a sinner is. Okay, I was a sinner already, and that's why I did those three things. Those three things didn't make me a sinner. We're all sinners. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So biblically, we all need him. to be connected with him. And he made that possible by sending Jesus to die on the cross to receive the wrath of all the sin of the world onto himself. And then because he himself had no sin, he rose from the dead and he's alive. And he can, and because my sins are paid for in him, when I believe that, and that night at this party, really, I got challenged and I believed it. And it just seemed like I should thank him. And so I was guided to thank him for doing that for me. And then I think in the prayer, also, I felt like I was a mess when I was 22. I was definitely a mess. And I just was like, yeah, Lord, and if you can be my guide and my Lord, that would be great. I didn't grow up in the church. So this was, I thought this was new news, you know. I didn't know churches believed this. So I came to faith at this party. 3 days later, bam, God is in my life and he's speaking. And my lifelong monologue became a dialogue. And, you know, it's so funny because people will say, oh, that sounds so mystical, Tom. You know, well, guess what? when you're born again, that is a kind of a mysterious thing. But I hear people say, oh, God doesn't speak to me. Christian people who are born again. But the same people will confess to me sin, right? They'll say, oh, I did this and I shouldn't have. Who told you? I didn't tell you. Satan's not going to tell you because you're remorseful and you're going to change that way. It was the Holy Spirit that convicted your heart. He told you. And he doesn't just want to tell you things that you do wrong. He's really a very loving, good, nurturing father, too. And so he's also going to tell you things that he wants you to do because he knows it's best for you. He's really a great father. But none of us have this perfect father image coming into the kingdom. So there's things we have to learn. And it took me quite a while to learn that, wow, everything he's led me in, I have not wanted to do, but I said, yes, Lord. And I loved it. And he did it over and over again. And after a while, I was like, he's really good. And he really does love me. And he really does want to do what's best for me.
Yeah.
And that could include martyrdom. That could include my dying, because I've got this eternal perspective now. I've got eternal life. And if he wants me to die for him, to go to get AIDS or to go and sit on the toilet for 3 weeks and die, you know, from something else, you know what? 500 years from now, I'll know why. And it'll be glorious and it'll be just, and there'll be fruit from it. And I trust him for that now. I didn't, when he first told me to go to Haiti, I wasn't there yet. But, you know, over time, when you start saying, yes, Lord, and you see the goodness of it, and you see fruit that you never thought you'd see, just by living longer, you know, this kind of stuff comes with time spent with him over years. So
that's just wonderful. No, that was wonderful. I appreciate you taking it in a direction. Yeah, I'm listening for the common ground in my view and a lot of listeners and viewers' view in terms of, okay, that's fine. That's the mission. That's a nonprofit. What about business? What about a for-profit? And I'm selling right now. I'm selling. Do it in a way that glorifies him. And there's just do it in a way that glorifies him. So if you're going to ask people to go into the mission field, what is he telling? The great thing to do about somebody who wants to approach me and start a business, I'm going to go, what is he telling you? It's the common ground. The common ground is follow him. Listen to what he tells you to do correctly. He's a loving father. He's going to give you all kind of messages and wonderful things. And there'll also be some hardships because he's growing you or teaching you or your own decisions, or you just don't know sometimes.
We live in fallen beings and we're surrounded by fallen people in a fallen system and hardships. We've been promised in this life you'll have trials, but I've overcome the world. You'll have trouble in this life. Each day has enough worries of its own. So we're not supposed to worry about ahead. Something that jumped out at me too was, I think I don't know business, but I'm guessing it's the same thing when I look at your life. And I think you're never going to retire, you know?
No,
I'll slow down, you know, I'm going to slow down. And it's actually a blessing to slow down because you stop doing things that don't have eternal value for you. But I think you always, because God is God, he'll always have an adventure, something for you to do. And so you might stop one business. I might stop a nonprofit that I just don't have energy to do anymore, but he'll have something else for me to do.
Yeah.
So I think, and I when I see you in business, I think I can't imagine you ever really retiring because you'll get some vision to start something else. And it'll be from the Lord, and you'll spend your energy doing that. And people in your life around you will get blessed and inspired and encouraged in the things that he's moving them into.
Yeah, that's a perspective on retirement. I'm not. I won't. I won't because
Can't imagine that.
he is. It's a big old grand adventure with him. I get frustrated with him. I don't mind. You crap. I'll talk to him like, well, what in the world are you doing here? Why now? Why not sooner? Why is this person asking that? Why is that asking that? But in the end, it's just this wonderful grand adventure of going, I couldn't think of anything greater than going, what's today going to bring? Lord, I'm here. Use me. What's today going to bring?
And a lot of that is just discovering how good he is and how great he is and how kind he is and how he cares about things that we don't care about. And then finding out it would be good if I cared about that. So
That goes back to this too. And then I'll ask you if we've forgotten anything and I get in touch with you. I don't think it doesn't matter how old you are. If somebody's watching this and they feel moved to do something, don't let the world tell you that you're too old or too young. Don't let technology tell you. Don't let what you see on TV tell you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. He can still use you to do business as a platform. Don't listen to the lies. Was that too strong, Tom, or was that?
No, I mean, he told the world told me that I couldn't learn a foreign language. And they weren't wrong. I failed French and Spanish. I deserved to fail French and Spanish. But a lot of times as a kid, if I didn't see the value in doing something, I didn't put my heart into it. I wasn't very disciplined, you know. But when you're sitting around a bunch of people and you want to get to know them, see a lot of language learning is like if the goal is language learning, I'm not going to learn a language. If my goal is getting to know this person who doesn't speak a lick of English, I'll learn the language to get to know them along the way. But the goal is higher than learning language. And I think that's what happened to me. Wherever I went, really, books got me so far, but it was, oh, I really want this person to know Jesus. And then in the process of trying to explain Jesus is to them, I picked up so much of the language, and I would learn a language that way. So,
And what a blessing it is, Tom, to be able to spend time with you. People that are watching and listening now know why. I've known him for forever, forever. Seems like forever. And he's the one it will be. He's the one I come to and say, hey, Tom, get a minute. And Tom, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how should they?
email's the best. I'm really not a phone person. I have a phone. I don't like phones. You can text me on the phone, or you can, and I'll get you back. My phone, I'm really low tech. My phone has voicemail on it, but I haven't figured out how to get the voicemail. And I don't really want to get the voicemail because someone will just say, call me back. But if you text me and I know it's you, I'll text you back and say, what do you want? Probably. But the best way is probably email. Email is probably the best way to get to me. So,
Okay. Or you can always find me and I'll connect you with Tom because hopefully I won't
works
be
too.
very far from the guy
He's
soon.
a really good networker, so
Yeah.
you know, it works. And he protects my time too. He's not going to just send someone to me that I can't help or that I can't be of any, benefit to. So,
Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
thank you, JD.
Okay.
And this concludes another episode of the Circle of the Panda podcast. If you need to find more about Tom Harvey and the services that he offers, you can find him at releasedtheoppressedministries.org. A link will be in the show notes below, or you can just reach out to me at JD@circleofthepanda.com. We wish you all the best and peace to you.